the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
AI has been a great tool for productivity, but it's also a gift to scammers who quickly figured out it can be used to clone your voice and create deepfake images of celebrities, and then use those images to convince you that Elon Musk or Johann Rupert are inviting you to invest alongside them in some scheme offering ridiculously high returns. In the crypto market, there are pump and dump schemes where AI generates thousands of social media profiles to hype a new crypto project. And then there's the nasty sounding pig butchering scam, where the fraudsters use AI for real-time face swaps and deep fake voices during video calls to build trust, often posing as romantic partners before convincing victims to invest in fake schemes. It's clear that the number of scams across South Africa and the world is on the rise, and they're not always, it must be said, based around crypto. To help us understand the latest trends, we're joined by Sam Nkize, who is head of compliance for Binance. Hi, Sam. Thanks very much for joining us. You spend a lot of your time looking out for scams of various kinds. Just take us through some of the more common ones that you're coming across.
Thank you very much, Kieran, and thanks to your listeners. So I think scams are obviously very prevalent in crypto, probably obviously because of the emerging, its nature as an emerging and innovative industry. I think we definitely see common scams in the form of phishing scams. You see quite a lot of vishing scams, and these are obviously very typical to financial services, right? So this is, at a very practical level where someone will send you an email, or you get a text message or a phone call with someone saying, look, I'm from Binance. Can I help you set up an account? We've noted something suspicious in your account. We'd like to investigate further. And then often this is the entrance point or the gateway that scammers use. They often use that to establish a bit of trust. They'll name drop. They'll use some sort of legitimate source. And often that's then used to steal information. They then use that to effectively gain access. At times, I think we've seen some scary stuff where they use gateways such as phishing to get access to user devices. In the alternative, user credentials, things like passwords, login details, usernames. And once they've got that, they then effectively try to almost distract the user, keep them occupied using other things while they get to work, obviously for nefarious reasons. And these are very common scams that we see on a day-to-day basis. Another very prevalent one in the South African environment is also fake investment scams. These are often a lot more complex. They take place over a much longer period of time. And I think, unfortunately, looking at South Africa's socioeconomic environment, get-rich-quick scams are very prevalent because people obviously want to break the clutches of poverty and unemployment quickly. Unfortunately, we don't necessarily have a highly sophisticated populace with respect to financial education. So we often see people being promised larger-than-life returns. These investment scams are often targeted at your vulnerable groups. They target pensioners, people with pension payouts, and the alternative novices who've never really used platforms before, establish a relationship of trust, probably will invest. And these are often the most difficult to investigate, right? Because they use the investment almost as a decoy over a long period. You see, it takes months on end. And then at some point in time, the scammer just goes missing. And the alternative, they'll dupe the user into sending their crypto or sending money to an alternative address, which is generally off platform. A lot of the problematic, or let me say nefarious, clandestine engagements happen probably on WhatsApp, Telegram, and you'll see a lot of Telegram groups. And someone says, look, I'm able to invest X amount, I promise you 10, 15, 20% returns. So these, unfortunately, are very prevalent scams that we see in the South African environment. We also see impersonation scams. I think we've seen a lot of these, to the point you made. At some point, I think people thought Elon Musk was investing in a particular type of asset product. And these are deep fakes, and they're done so meticulously that they are really able to dupe even the most sophisticated of traders, at times of users. So these are often very important things that we need to look out for. You know, again, we also see things like jobs, Roman scams. I think everyone would know, would recall that, you know, the Tinder swindler, you know, where people try to forge relationships with people over an elongated period. And again, often the very common typology is where a scammer, you know, tries to establish a relationship of trust, but this is always done off platform. It's never done on an official platform. It's done by, you'll never hear the person's voice. It's often, purely virtual, often, you know, in the form of text messages, Telegram, WhatsApp. You know, they establish trust over a set period. They really try to get people to invest, to put in as much money as possible, and then they go missing. And these are the things that we see quite commonly. And we often try to guard against these, saying, look, Binance would never, we would never call you. We don't have a call center. We would never ask you for your password. And these are obviously typical things that we see in financial services. And I think a very noteworthy point is also that this isn't something that's necessarily bespoke or unique to crypto assets. If you were to look, for example, at some of the reports, both from the Financial Intelligence Center, from the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, these are things that are very prevalent across financial services, which is why it's so important to drive financial education.
Yeah. Now, Binance makes a lot of use of AI to help detect fraud, just as the scammers are using AI to create deep fakes and to have voice cloning and things like that. Maybe take us through how that works, and does it help in quickly identifying suspicious transactions? How has AI changed your job?
Look, in principle, what we're obviously trying to do, and this is always my philosophy, we're trying to make sure that we're creating a safe ecosystem in what ordinarily would be an unsafe environment. Now, how do we do that? Excuse me. We introduce things like machine learning. So we've obviously got the onboarding journey where we onboard a user. So for example, Sam, Kiaran would onboard. They would provide us with their personal information. They would provide us with things like where they get their money from. So for example, you pose questions of that nature. What will you be using? What's the purpose of the account? And these are all things, you know, they're often mundane at first for the user, but it's very important for users to answer these things very honestly, because what we're effectively doing is we're creating an intel, and we're trying intelligence-driven type of learning, where we're trying to understand our user. You know your client, you understand what their transactional behavior may be. Then we introduce tools, machine learning, which are effectively able to do real-time transaction monitoring and transaction screening, which effectively enables us to, one, get a sense of the type of transactions, the day-to-day transactions this particular user is engaging in, but more importantly, detect any suspicious or completely irregular or out of the ordinary transactions. I'll give a very practical example. You know, you've got, for example, a 60-year-old male, female, using crypto literally just for investment purposes. They may trade or transact every other week or every other month. These are generally people who want to hold investment and are trying to see a long-term type of return. However, when we then see, for example, an abrupt transaction, for example, an abrupt withdrawal for maybe 500,000 million rand, or in the alternative, very rapid movements, this then, you know, obviously sets our machine learning, in motion. They're able to detect, it flags this type of behavior, and we're able to block transactions. We obviously don't do it necessarily to create friction in the user journey, but we're doing it, you know, to create a safe environment. You're able to block transactions, slow the transaction down, request and conduct an enhanced due diligence process where we request enhanced information on the user. So for example, you know, Kiaran, we'd be able to come back to you and ask, okay, cool. What's the purpose of this transaction? Could you confirm your names, full names, details? Are you able to, you know, we obviously also have a multi-factor authentication. So we would ask you, for example, we would send a particular, you know, OTP either to, you know, potentially through your email, cell number, or anything of the sort. In the alternative, we use biometrics. And these are all done to ensure that we're able to ensure that the person on the other side is the person who is effectively our client. And these are things that AI machine learning is really able to do. You know, I'll give a very practical example, where AI was able to flag this. At some point, we actually had a scam where, there was a group of scammers who were effectively, imitating or trying to impersonate our head of marketing, Rachel Conlon. we effectively created almost an automated type voice message coupled with an email, sending this to users. And, you know, of course, you know, scammers always get, you know, we don't know how they get access to this information, to use information, but as and when they do, you know, they almost impersonate someone very senior in the firm, you know, trying to scam people into sending money to a particular wallet address. And, you know, we were able to detect, our system was able to detect that and block it, right? A practical ones I've also been involved in was a scenario, you know, I gave you a scenario of the, you know, the elderly male who'd invested pension savings. We literally saw, I think there was a rapid movement of about 200,000-300,000 rand in it literally in a space of a few hours. We were able to block the transactions. We were able to obviously conduct an enhanced due diligence process. Because it's a scammer, this obviously failed. We then obviously recalibrated. We were able to get, reconcile where the crypto was sent to. And all of this was then obviously then packaged into something we could then use to communicate to law enforcement, and then an investigation was able to ensue. So this is a very practical example of how AI is really able to stop criminals in their tracks and enable us just to ensure that, you know, as and when possible, we are able to block fraud, block scams, and then most importantly, recoup any lost funds and just place our clients in a far safer and better position.
And were you able to recoup the funds for the people who were involved?
Yeah, some of them actually. We were. Some, of course, I think they were slightly more sophisticated, where they were sent to unhosted wallets offshore. Those obviously can't, those obviously are far more difficult because often they're linked to the dark web. But with respect to the funds that were actually sent to a lot of the local exchanges, local recognized exchanges, we were able to communicate and the funds were actually recouped. And we've also then, obviously, very importantly, have the ability of, for example, as and when, because often what the scammers do is that to establish some sort of relationship of trust, they actually do have one, at the very least, one legitimate account that they attempt to open up and use. And that's the account that we then often target. We block funds and we use that as a mechanism of effectively trying to ensure that any recourse, we would act against this particular account. And then we obviously also share data with our counterparts, being other exchanges, to do the same on their end, just to ensure that scammed clients, at the very least, able to be placed in a better position than losing everything.
I'm interested to find out how that would actually happen, where somebody, there's a transaction happening under somebody's name, he's a Binance client, he's transferring a couple of 100,000 rand out of the account. Is that done without the person's knowledge? Somebody's managed to get control of his account?
Yeah. So what we've seen, for example, and this was a scary example, right? So there's a tech, tech people use, which is effectively, it enables. So for example, I would be able to give you access to my device remotely. And, it effectively shares my screen and, people were then duped into, inputting credentials during that process. And what we saw was that the user was actually, they were aware that they were communicating with someone. But what they weren't aware of was that a transaction was being done and money or crypto assets effectively being moved out of their wallets to a different wallet. That leg they weren't aware of. And when we effectively did the recalibration investigation, we found that the person actually was under the impression that they were speaking to an investor who was going to invest on their behalf. They were just assisting with a particular technical glitch, which would enable them then to acquire X amount of crypto. And they were merely just moving funds to a linked wallet. And unfortunately, this is a scam that, even the most sophisticated people can fall victim to. So at that stage, we were obviously then able to, as soon as this happened, EDD then took place. The user was contacted just to ensure that they were aware that X type of transaction was taking place. We obviously were able to ensure that we knew that the users, the person communicating with, and then secondly, just to ensure that just to explain the purpose of the transaction. And it's at that stage that people then became aware that, look, this transaction isn't something I've sanctioned. It's going to a foreign wallet. I'm completely unaware. And that's where the investigation process and, had to kick in. So, these are typical examples and often users are unaware. With respect to investment scams, however, users often are aware. You do communicate with them, but unfortunately, people are so fixated into, and it's very unfortunate, literally very short term returns, larger than life type rewards, that they don't realize the gravity of the situation, and that they're really part of a very, very serious ploy, and they're going to lose money. And those are often the more difficult ones just to recoup, because often they take place over a very long period. The person is literally convinced that they're really investing into a viable product, or via legitimate financial services provider, whereas they aren't. And often be they need to take and often at that time funds we may not be able to recoup the funds in that instance, but investigation is able to take place, and we can provide the intelligence to law enforcement.
That is pretty frightening. I mean, this kind of thing has put a lot of people off crypto. I guess it should be pointed out that most scams by far involve ordinary cash, and banks, are involved. And we've seen this happening all too often. But it does scare me a bit that, you say that in these particular instances where somebody was given access to your computer, and that often happens where you have got a technical problem that you're trying to solve. Oh, I can help you. Just let me jump on there. Let's use AnyDesk or, one of these computer sharing devices. And then, of course, they've got full access to whatever is there, right?
Absolutely. And I think, it's really what we try to drive and say that, look, your credentials are your PI, your private information. It's not something you should share with anyone. Anyone who says they can do X on your behalf, who says, buy now, I'm working with Binance, I'm working with any other exchange, I've been sanctioned to help you with a technical problem. That's, those aren't legitimate channels. We really only try to keep any correspondences with our users in-app, because when it's in-app, at the very least, we will always have control over the type of communication. We know exactly what was discussed, and we would always be able to point back at where an issue happened. So this is really what we try to drive home, where people often, unfortunately, share things like private keys. They're told about claims to rewards, and in order to do so, you need to give us X type of information. And it's scary, especially if you're looking at how prevalent this has become. I think billions are lost every year. If you look at these channel analysis reports, billions are lost every year. And it's just not even just South Africa, right? You see this even in the most sophisticated jurisdictions. But, it's really people taking advantage of, people's willingness to want to be part of this this really great ecosystem. And to your point, it's really put a lot of people off crypto, where at some point crypto has obviously seemed to be synonymous with scams, and we've obviously worked really hard to disabuse the general public of that misconception, and really just show that we do have a safe ecosystem, and we really drive people playing within the parameters of the ecosystem, not sharing personal information, and really just sticking in app, which is such a fundamental point, with respect to the interface with our systems. Yeah.
Right. And when you talk about sticking in app, if you've got the Binance app on your phone, that is where you receive and send communications, not through emails and not through WhatsApp and so on.
Absolutely. Especially, not through emails, not through WhatsApp, through Telegram, which is very prevalent. I'm sure if you've got Telegram, you find yourself in a new group every second day. And these are things you really need to avoid, because often the groups are deliberately, you've actually got bots, being used to send positive messages about the group and how much money people have made. Those aren't real people. Those are bots deliberately being used to manipulate how you're going to interact with it. So we really try to your point, stick an app. This is where you'll receive all communications. We've also got the Binance Academy, for example, if you want to learn how to trade, you want to educate yourself in certain specific products. So we really drive that type of personal education, just in ensuring that people are able to avoid scams in that manner.
Right. And maybe just give us a couple of tips on how do people protect themselves from this. You've mentioned only receive communications on the app. If you're a Binance client, if you're a Luno client or a Valor client, I guess it would be the same there. Avoid getting any communications or answering any communications by WhatsApp, Signal, Telegram, and email.
Yeah. So I think most importantly, generally, the principle is always scams aren't obviously exclusive to crypto. And it's very important, in the same way as you wouldn't share your banking PIN with a stranger, don't do the same with your crypto credentials. I think that's generally the rule. And we really try to drive that. drive that home. I think we often say to people, look, best way to do it, exercise caution with unsolicited offers. So, for example, when you've got people who are going to call you, tell you about this great investment product or send you an email, exercise caution. Generally, those people, I learned as a youngster, people don't invite others to make money. That's not how it happens in the ordinary course of the day. So you really need to exercise caution. Ask yourself, why is this a legitimate source? Conduct a bit of research into people who claim to be financial services providers, because that at the very least will give you an indication of whether or not this person is legit. Use strong security measures. So as we've said, at Binance, fortunately, we actually promote multi-factor authentication. So, we don't merely rely on your use of the app. We also use second, third factor authentication, where we provide you with OTPs. We use biometrics as well. And all of these things are very deliberate to ensure that, we know who we're dealing with. And we really, really tell people, look, we really try to promote, the culture of, change passwords as and when you need to, use different authentication, really try to stick ahead of the curve. Beware of red flags, right? These are very important. Anyone who's telling you to send them money or send them crypto quickly is generally trying to scam you. So really beware of that. Take your time, consult the app, visit our Binance Academy, just understand, what certain transactions are for. People generally try to take advantage of people where they know that, look, there may be no vices, they don't understand the product. They'll say, look, I want to open up a futures account with you. Educate yourself. Ask yourself, what is futures? Go onto the net, get a thorough understanding, because these are ways of really ensuring that you're able to protect yourself. Then in the unfortunate event where you do believe that you've been scammed, then we obviously now deal with remediative steps. You need to report this very quickly, because I think every second, every minute counts. So, for example, we've seen how quickly, crypto is able to move. Obviously, I know you've spoken to Hannes before. And we always say with Hannes, look, what we've done with crypto assets or blockchain technology is that we've built a Ferrari and it goes really quickly. So we really need to ensure that we're able to put in the roadblocks at the appropriate places to ensure that we're able to catch it quickly. So communicate quickly, let us know, and communicate an app. We'll be able to then take remediative steps of investigating, blocking as and when we need to, and really just trying to ensure that we're able to protect our users. And as a parting shot on this topic, where we say, look, crypto in itself isn't inherently unsafe. And to the point, what we've done is that we've created the safeguards to ensure that within the ecosystem, in platform, you're definitely protected. You've got the ability to report any issues you've got. For example, when you conduct a peer-to-peer type transaction, we almost ask you three times to ensure that you've received the money in your account before you release the crypto. And this is all to ensure that you're not being duped by people who try to say to you, look, just send it to a different account. I can e-wallet you the money. All of these things are generally people trying to scam you. And because we've got this in app and we really try to send you prompting messages in app just to ensure that you know what you're doing and you're fully conscious of and aware, just to ensure that you're able to protect yourself in that regard. But, most importantly, again, education, education, education. I can't stress the significance of that enough, in that people just really need to go out, educate yourself on the product, fully understand it. At the end of the day, it's your money. And, you don't want to have a poor understanding of where your money is going. Get a very good understanding, understand how you're going to invest, what you're going to do. And of course, if, for example, you do find yourself in a position where you are using the services of an intermediary, ensure that they're registered, do some research on them, make sure that these are people who will actually, have to account to someone if something goes wrong. That's very important.
Right. So you're a head of compliance at Binance. For people who don't know, Binance is the world's largest crypto exchange. Tell us about your background, how you come from a crypto background. You come from a legal background.
Yeah. So I'm not necessarily crypto native, as people like to say. So I'm actually an attorney by profession. I practiced law at Weber Wenzel. I then moved into the banking industry. I cut my teeth at Nedbank. Worked my way up to, senior regulatory manager there, and then was also part of building up the Capitec Business Bank. And I think that's where, I got real exposure to crypto assets and eventually moved into to Binance, where we were really part of this journey in promoting crypto. So that's just a bit about me. I'm not crypto native. It's taken a lot of learning, a lot of upskilling as well. So And I think it's been a great journey.
Interesting. Now, I do want to just bring up, Bybit, which is the second largest crypto exchange in the world. They had a hack recently. About $1.5 billion was stolen by North Koreans, which is a very interesting hack, which has been studied enormously around the world, the way they managed to pull this off, where they cultivated relationships with people within Bybit. It must be said that Bybit did have the reserves to cover that $1.5 billion. So none of the customers were at risk. But did this cause you and I guess other exchanges to sort of look at how could this possibly happen to us and how could we prevent that?
Absolutely. I think if you look at the, the Bybit, scam, it's effectively, I think they were just in a very unenviable position because, when you recalibrate, it wasn't even their fault. This is something that had happened almost with a vendor. And this is why you then have the significance of, ensuring that you're able to conduct very thorough third-party due diligences, right? For example, I think as an industry, especially as Binance, we ensure that any third parties who will be sharing any client information with are properly vetted. They've got the appropriate cybersecurity controls and systems, and ensuring that any information shared is shared in a safe environment. And, there's very strong consequence management should there be any data breaches or anything of the sort. And the Bybit fraud really just speaks about ensuring that the entire ecosystem is safe. Even amongst ourselves as counterparties, we obviously are need to ensure that any exchange of user information is done so with strict adherence. Locally, we've obviously got POPI, globally, the European Union, we've got GDPR, but in strict compliance with data privacy legislation and laws, ensuring that you conduct those due diligences appropriately, you conduct stress testing on your systems just to ensure that they aren't easily penetrated, as and when, for example, a third party, an employee may be infiltrated. You have to have the ability of having, systems and walls in place just to ensure that there's various systems of control, and approval, that's so important. And I think, the Bybit fraud, literally we lost billions in a day, tanked, the cost of Ethereum, for example, caused a lot of user losses. So, and I think there's great lessons to be learned there just in ensuring that, we aren't merely dealing with our own systems, but even our vendors, our employees. You drive training, you ensure that people are aware, and there are consequences for non-compliance. So, for example, where employees, probably, deliberately expose the company or the entity to loss of that nature, to data breaches, to any type of untrammeled risk, there are consequences. Where vendors do the same, there need to be contractual consequences. You really need to ensure that you because effectively we're dealing with people's livelihoods, and we really need to take utmost, and, we're obviously entrusted with all of this information, data, funds as well, and we really need to, protect it. At all costs.
Right. Now, internationally, we are seeing a lot more collaboration amongst crypto companies to block fraud, the kind that we're talking about today. Now, one of the new rules that's been introduced in South Africa is the travel rule by the Financial Intelligence Center. Basically, in any transaction, a crypto transaction above 5,000 Rand is going to have to be reported. This, of course, is the death of privacy, which a lot of people hoped, with cryptocurrency, you could transact anonymously. It was one of the great hopes and dreams. Those days are clearly gone. This is creating quite a headache, from what I understand, amongst the crypto companies here in South Africa. Because you basically can only deal then with exchanges which have KYC'd, know your customer, they can verify the identity of that customer on the other side. Is this creating a headache for you?
I think it certainly has created an administrative, process that we've obviously now needed to employ. Fortunately, I think You know, Binance being a large multinational, we've obviously had to implement travel rule in several jurisdictions across the world. So we've actually, you know, for example, India being one of them, we've done the same, and done the same in Poland and Bahrain too. So we've at the very least do have some experience in implementing the travel rule. Of course, often the biggest, and again, the travel rule speaks to an entire ecosystem, because if you read the rule, the directive carefully, it effectively suggests that, you know, an exchange like Binance wouldn't be able to transmit crypto to an exchange or a counterparty. If we're using the terminology in the directive, a counterparty that doesn't have similar controls, a counterparty it hasn't conducted a counterpart, it hasn't conducted a counterparty due diligence on. Which effectively obviously places a lot of exchanges in South Africa in a deeply precarious position, because, it's got the ability to effectively tank the industry. Obviously, what we've done is that we've obviously, we've done the work in just setting up the system internally, enabling us to obviously share the information as and when, the turn on date. I think that's, 30 April. But I think it's certainly a very serious administrative hurdle for a lot of our counterparts, especially at an industry level. But very importantly, I think it does serve a very important purpose, being to ensure, I think, as per the FATF rules, being to ensure that we are conducting business. We don't conduct business with anonymous clients, anonymized exchanges or unhosted wallets. There's always some sort of recourse. And this is obviously there to ensure that we're able to properly combat money laundering and terrorist financing. But of course, I think it comes at a great cost, especially to the smaller exchanges, who obviously will now need to incur very, very serious costs in finding vendors, developing systems which will enable them to share this type of data. But of course, I think we obviously we believe compliance is always I think our principle is that it's a competitive advantage. We want to comply to ensure that we're creating the right ecosystem, and it's part and parcel of our collaboration with the regulators as well. I think we'd obviously, would have loved a more phased approach, but we obviously will be working together with the industry and the regulator, ensuring that we're able to roll it out successfully.
Final question, Sam. Is there a danger that the crypto space becomes overregulated? And in becoming overregulated, like we have now with the travel rule, even relatively small amounts of money have to be disclosed to the authorities, that this starts to blunt the adoption?
Absolutely. I think, regulation and innovation is almost a chicken and egg scenario, where over-regulation stifles innovation, but, too much innovation without regulation poses a very serious risk to consumers. So I think, we obviously always need a balancing approach, almost like a pendulum swing when you're assessing how we ensure that, users are able to ultimately transact. We're able to properly report to regulators, combat money laundering and terrorist financing, all of these nefarious things, but at the same time, still ensure that people are still able to transact freely. And that for us, that's the most important thing. And, obviously what regulatory barriers do is that they increase the cost of compliance, and that cost, unfortunately, is passed on to consumers. It's the cost of doing business. But we really, really try to promote strong collaboration. We've always opened our doors to working together with regulators, educating them on crypto assets, just to ensure that everyone is aware of what's happening in the industry. And at times, things don't necessarily need regulation, but engagement. And that's what we try to promote. So I think for me, over-regulation is definitely a bad thing for the industry. It will stifle innovation, obviously reduce adoption, and effectively reduce financial freedom. And our view is that we really just need a mature approach where gone are the days where compliance is measured with a yardstick. It needs to be measured progressively, and we need to start looking at the spirit of things as opposed to merely assessing, just the black letter law principles.
We're going to leave it there. That was Sam Mkhize, Head of Compliance for Binance. Thanks very much, Sam, for joining us on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast.
Greatly appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you very much to your listeners.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za. or the MoneyWeb app, and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.